Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Hey, what's up? This is Damon Johnson from Black Star Riders, and you're listening to Talking Metal. Yeah.
Hey, this is Ricky Warwick from Black Star Riders, and you are listening to Talking Metal.
Hey guys, welcome to another edition of Talking Metal. That intro track that you hear on just about every episode of Talking Metal is, of course, the great Sean Baker. And the name of that song is Which Way to Radioland. It's this song right here. That one. Love the song. Love Sean Baker's guitar work. I think he is one of the unsung heroes, one of the guitar heroes in waiting that we still just hasn't broken through to the mainstream, but really should, because he's just so good. Love you, Sean. You're the best. And love these guys on the show today, Damon and Ricky from Black Star Riders. What an honor to talk to these guys. Hooked up with them in their hotel room in New York City on a Friday night. And we talked some rock and roll. We talked about their new record, The Killer Instinct, which is coming out in February. Wow, and I've heard it, guys. It is an insanely good record. There are a few records which are already kind of on my radar. I know we're only in January, but on my radar for the potential best record, or, you know, my top 10 list of 2015. And this one is definitely a contender because it is really, really good. In some ways, maybe even better than the album they did a couple years back, All Hell Breaks Loose. I think I like it better. I'm not sure. It's definitely fresher to my ears. And again, I'm loving it. Great stuff. So when it comes out in February, do yourself a favor and pick up The Killer Instinct by Black Star Riders, formerly known as Thin Lizzy. And that Thin Lizzy spirit is still alive on this new record. It's on full, actually. It's great, great stuff. Speaking of Thin Lizzy, when you talk to people about Thin Lizzy, they usually talk about how great they were during the 70s, and there were so many great albums and tunes that they had back in the 1970s. However, you know, they've obviously kind of, this spirit of Thin Lizzy is still alive today with Black Star Riders, which Scott Gorham, the original Thin Lizzy member, is still involved with and still going strong with Black Star Riders. But I guess what I'm saying is Thin Lizzy had some stuff in the 80s, the early 80s, that a lot of times when I talk to people, rock fans, about Thin Lizzy, they seem to be not so aware of the great songs that came out on Renegade and Thunder and Lightning. And I talk to like hipsters who are into the whole, the, you know, old school rock, and they're going out and buying their vinyl and stuff. And I say, oh yeah, my favorite Thin Lizzy records are, you know, Thunder and Lightning and Renegade. And they're like, huh, what are those records? And if you don't know those two records, they're just awesome. I mean, Thunder and Lightning, there's a number of bands like Kiss and like Thin Lizzy and even Rush for that matter that define themselves in the 70s with just amazing and great music and showmanship and just rock star god antics. And when they came to the 80s, you know, and these younger bands that they influenced and they, in a way, gave birth to the you know, new wave of British heavy metal and the LA hard rock and glam metal and heavy metal bands out of LA. I mean, Thin Lizzy was a tremendous influence on both those scenes. And in some ways, and so was Kiss for that matter. And in some ways, they adjusted, in my humble opinion, I may be wrong about this, but I don't think I'm wrong about it, but maybe the people in the band would disagree with me on this, but they adjusted their look and their sound slightly in the 80s to kind of ride that wave of the sounds that they had actually in a way given birth to in the 70s, but had maybe changed and been manipulated a little bit by a younger group. And when Thin Lizzy did just that, they put on a little more leather, some bullet belts, and you know, they got John Sykes in the band. They put out what I consider one of their greatest records, the Thunder and Lightning from 1983. It's an album that I discovered when I was a kid, and I still love it to this day. It holds up against any of the Thin Lizzy records, in my humble opinion, and it holds up against any of the hard rock and heavy metal records that were exploding in the early 80s. And in a lot of ways, puts those records to shame. It is just an insanely good record. Again, I'm talking about Thunder and Lightning from 1983 by Thin Lizzy. If you don't know the title track, go check it out. It'll just rock your socks off. John Sykes, who of course went on to do work with Whitesnake and Blue Murder. This is a song off of that record. So let's check that out right now. We'll come back and talk a little bit more about my big news, which I promised I'd announce to you. And a few other things before we get into my interview with Ricky Warwick and Damon Johnson from Black Star Riders. Here's a little Thin Lizzy from 1983. I've got to find an occupation. I've got to keep myself employed. It's a bad situation. This is the one. this is the one. It doesn't get any better than that when it comes to rock music, my friends. Thin Lizzy. That song is off of the great, great, highly underrated record, Thunder and Lightning. Do yourself a favor and buy it. Oh boy. And speaking of Thin Lizzy, Scott Gorham, of course, of Thin Lizzy fame, has his band Black Star Riders, which Thin Lizzy kind of evolved into, if you will. And we have Ricky and Damon on the show today. I met up with them in their hotel room in New York City on January 23rd, I believe it was. And two great guys. Loved hanging out with them. Loved talking about them. It's rare that you get to an interview and the guy you're interviewing says, "Do you want a beer?" Love that. Thank you for the beer, Ricky. And they are great guys. So we're going to get right into that interview in just a few minutes right here. But I wanted to mention my big news that I hinted about on the last episode and on Facebook is that I will be joining the crew of That Metal Show on VH1. This will be the first job I've done for VH1 since, I believe, 2004, going way back over 10 years. And yeah, I'm psyched, man. I'm completely psyched. I believe I appeared on a few VH1 shows in like maybe 2005 or something. But the last show that I worked on as a producer was, I think, 100 Most Metal Moments on VH1. I've done shows on other networks, of course, since then. Some metal, some not. Recently worked on Kendra on Top, if you happen to know that show. But anyways, I'm thrilled. I'm completely psyched. I can't wait to work with Eddie Trunk, Don Jameson, my good buddies. Jim Florentine, I don't know. I look forward to meeting him. Jeff Bumgardner, the producer of that show, longtime buddy of mine. I'm completely psyched and honored and humbled to join the crew of That Metal Show as one of their producers. So I'm completely psyched, guys. I'll be handling all the online content, and then I'll be co-producing the show with Eddie Trunk and Jeff Bumgardner. My official title on the show is actually coordinating producer, I think. So completely psyched. And I haven't started yet, but I will start in February. And I don't know how much I'm going to actually talk about That Metal Show on Talking Metal, because Talking Metal has nothing to do with VH1 Classic. And VH1 Classic likes to very much control the press and all the talk that's done about their properties. So again, I'm just an employee on that show. I'll be working for them for the entire 4-month stretch that season 14 is in production. And of course, maybe I will hype the episodes, as they're coming on air. And I hope that the schedule's not too insanely crazy that I have to, you know, cut back on Talking Metal. I don't want to do that. I want to continue this weekly podcast. So, yeah. So anyways, great news. And I don't know, it's really, really big news for me. I'm sure it's maybe not that big of a deal to a lot of you listeners. I'm not going to be on the show in front of the camera, but I will be working behind the scenes on That Metal Show. Funny how things work out. So there you go. And on that note, let's get into my interview with Ricky and Damon from Black Star Riders. I know I originally said Rick Allen would be joining me on this episode 515. He will definitely be joining me, but it's going to be actually on the next episode 516. So stay tuned for that. And here we go, my interview with Black Star Riders. And we'll check out a little sound sample of some of their new music after the interview. Hey, this is Mark Striegel from Talking Metal, and we have Ricky and Damon from Black Star Riders. How are you guys doing today?
Doing awesome, Mark. Good to see you, man.
Yep, doing great. Thank you.
Listen, the new record, The Killer Instinct, I had the privilege of listening to it. Sounds great. It comes out February 24th of this year, and just excellent, excellent stuff. Let's start by talking about who you're working with producer-wise on this record.
Yeah, man. We got to work with the much decorated, heralded rock lord, Nick Raskulinix. An amazing experience, man. It took us no time to fully understand, you know, why that guy has worked with so many great bands and made so many great records. So we were honored, man, really. And it was an incredible experience. You know, it was all that we could have hoped for and more. He really digs in, hands-on with every phase of making a great rock record, man. Tore the arrangements apart first day of rehearsal, you know, or pre-production. And just passionate, man. Passionate about drum parts, passionate about microphones, about guitar sounds, about vocal, you know, getting vocal takes. He just, it's a pleasure, man. I think I could speak for all five of us that none of us have ever made a record that was that much fun. And, you know, to just kind of get inside an experience where you go, okay, well, this is how he made the record with Rush. This is how he made, you know, the Alice in Chains records.
Right.
Very cool, man. Very cool.
I mean, he's done so much great stuff from Ghost to Foo Fighters to, like, Rush, like you mentioned. And does he keep it fun? You mentioned fun, because a lot of times you hear about these producers are real strict and fights happen in the studio. But what you're saying, it sounds like it's fun. Ricky?
He's an amazing guy. He's got an amazing personality. Very easygoing. Very chilled. Just very relaxed. But he's got great people skills. He has that canny knack of talking you into doing something that you maybe don't want to do. It's maybe out of your box, out of your comfort zone. And he's got that knack of, before you know it, you're playing that guitar you didn't want to play. You're using that amp. You're using that vocal mic. You're singing that melody that you thought you didn't want to sing. He's crafty that way, but he does it in a great way. And he, you know, there wasn't one raised voice in a month of being in the studio. There wasn't one storming off or, you know, screw this or I don't like this. It was just harmonious. It was a month of creating art, making music, having a good time, being with good people, eating good food, working in a great studio. And you know, we went out one night, the whole night we were there, with the whole month in Nashville, one night, and there was no need to, because we were just in the studio. It was such a great vibe. You'd come back, you go to bed, you get up, you do it again the next day. And Nick was just very conducive to everybody having a good time, everybody feeling relaxed. And he's a funny guy as well, you know.
Yeah, I have to add, man, that I haven't shared this in a single interview that we've done for this whole album until right now, but I busted Nick on one of his tricks. You know, as Ricky mentioned, he's got great people skills, which he does. And, you know, instead of saying, that wasn't very good, let's try that again, Nick's trick is to go, well, how did it feel? He'll ask you, if he asks you, how did it feel? That means he wants you to do another take.
Great stuff. And now, you two guys did the majority of the songwriting for this record, right?
Yeah, we did. And, you know, it dates back to the debut album. It dates back to, you know, I'll never forget that first conversation that Ricky and I had. I had just joined Thin Lizzy. Scott Gorham had proclaimed to all of us, he said, this is the lineup that I want to go in and possibly make a new album with. So Ricky knew instinctively that meant, you know, the bar was going to be really high. We had to get a lot of work done. So, you know, I think Scott could just sense that now he had not one but two guys in the band that had a real you know, substantial resume, just not just as performers, but as songwriters. And, you know, I say this with great humility. I mean, that's what Phil was, man. I think the guy was a songwriter, right, above everything else. Amazing about his skill set. So, you know, the good news is that Ricky and I really fell into a chemistry easily, because we're not precious about the ideas. Ricky's always compiling lyrics, so there was never a shortage of anything. And, you know, throwing riffs back and forth. You know, all the songs were written on acoustic guitar before we would bring it in and work it with the band. So, and then you add some of Scott's great contributions. You know, he came in with some killer riffs on this album as well. But it is almost an indescribable honor and, you know, a privilege, man, to have this band be so open to the songs that Ricky and I are bringing in. And, you know, it's amazing writing with him. It's really easy and very inspiring.
Now, Ricky, there's obviously this enormous Thin Lizzy legacy that's just so sacred and that's attached with what you guys are doing with this band. How much of that plays on you as you're writing these songs, as you're coming up with ideas, do you have to say, well, like you said, the bar is so high, do you have to say, hey, this doesn't sound like the right style of song, we can't use this? Does that play into the songwriting a lot or a little?
That's a good question. That doesn't come into it so much. It's just whether it's good enough, whether the guys dig it, whether, you know, I've been doing this a while now, and I think that I know if it's good enough. If I don't think it's good enough, I'm not even going to play it to those guys. Because it's, what's the point, you know? I mean, I've got to be happy with it, and then, you know, I'll let those guys critique it. But the Phil thing, I look at it a different way. He's an influence, and he's there to guide me. And it's not so much that I'm trying to go, well, you know, what would Phil have done? I'm influenced by his style, his persona, his delivery, which I thought was amazing, is just a big influence on me. So I'm carrying that, you know, and singing those songs for 4 years. Right. It's kind of ingrained in who I am now.
Right.
Whether I like it or not, of course I love it. So it's just part of me, and I don't even really think. Certainly with the first album, yes, because of everything that was going on with the name change and, you know, the whole thing then. But after sort of 6 months, when we started to establish Black Star Riders, that nervousness went away, and now I don't even really think about it. You know, I want the Thin Lizzy fans to love Black Star Riders. They're the reason we're getting to do this. They came on board. They supported the first album. We're always going to have that with Scott, because of who he is and what he is. And, you know, he was just sounding Thin Lizzy. That guitar sounds, you know, Scott Gorham. So it's just part of it, you know, and I don't overthink it too much, and I don't think about it anymore. It's a great honor. It's a great privilege. And you know, what a position to be in. What a, you know, you even asking me that question. Yeah. You just asked me.
Right.
You know, 15 years, I've been like, what? You know, come on, man. Me singing Thin Lizzy, you know? What Phil's, you know? So it still freaks me out, but in a good way. It doesn't scare me anymore.
Now you mentioned having Scott in the band, just such a iconic figure. He is in his, you know, early 60s at this point. Would there ever be a time that you could see him possibly retiring from rock and this band continuing without him? Is that something that could happen?
You know, do you want to answer?
You know, I was just going to say, Scott talks about it. You know, he brings it up sometimes, and
we're like, you're not going anywhere.
Yeah, you know, we always say, look,
you're
bro, you're going to play forever. You know, you're going to do the. We're going to get at least 10 more good years out of you, bro. You know, we just feel like that as long as Scott wants to work and wants to tour, you know, that not only do we want to do it for ourselves, but we want to do it for Scotty as well. As Ricky touched on earlier, you know, we're fans of Scott Gorham as much as anyone else out there. And it's almost like we get to live these two different lives. We kind of shift gears into creative mode, and it's a different mindset. But then it's back to, hey, there's the guy, you know? Right. He's on the stage with us. He's given us this gift of this opportunity to even attempt something like this. So,
and we look after him on the road.
Yeah.
I mean, we care about him. We make sure he's looked after, and, you know, because he's a few years older. But Scott's not done yet. You know, Scott is definitely not done yet. I mean, to walk in and deliver a riff like Soldier's Town on the new album is Scott Gorham at his best. Yeah. And I think he's still playing some of the best, writing the best riffs on guitar of his life. So I don't even think about it, because I think Scott will just keep going, because I think he loves it and he lives for it. And I think he'll just keep going until he can't, you know?
I literally just got a text from Scotty in the last hour, and he said, I can't wait for us to get together, man. He goes, I'm bored out of my skull. You know, let's do this.
And I don't want to think about it. When that day comes, we'll deal with it. If that day comes and when it comes or whatever, let's deal with that then. Because he's my bro, you know, and I don't want to ever think about him not being there.
The what ifs. Yeah, sure. I got you.
But it's a great question.
Yeah, Robbie Crane recently has come on board with you guys. He has a long history with many, many different bands. And how'd you come into contact with him? Was there a connection? Did you know him from working with him in the past?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because I have met Robbie a couple of times through my great friend Carrie Kelly, who I played with in Alice Cooper. And Carrie always talked about Robbie in all kinds of situations, not just musical, but just, you know, hanging out, his spirit, his whole attitude or whatever. His name never crossed my mind, but Jimmy DeGrasso had actually played a couple gigs with Robbie. So, you know, I didn't know Robbie well enough to even have a firm understanding of what his musicianship was even like. Man, I knew he had played with some big bands, but, man, he came in and jammed with us at the Canyon Club,
Canyon
right?
Canyon Club in Agoura Hills, yeah.
Yeah, out in Los Angeles. And as incredible as this might sound, you know, the first song we played was The Boys Are Back in Town. And Scott Gorham's body language instantly was like, yeah, there it is. Which blew my mind, man, because, you know, look, Black Star Riders is what it is, and we're always going to kind of be diverse and trying different stuff. But, man, that Lizzie stuff has a certain swing that it's just got to have. It's got to feel right to Scott above all. So it was mind-blowing, man.
And you said this song hasn't swung like this since Phil played it.
Wow.
And I was like, I guess Robbie's got the gig then, you know what I mean?
Right, yeah, right from Scotty's mouth, man. He said that. So, and then, you know, now that we've had a couple of tours to get to know Robbie, he's an incredible human being, just an amazing husband and father, passionate about music. And, you know, the other thing that blew us away about Robbie, he said, look, man, I've been in a couple cool things. He said, you know, if you'd asked me to play bass for Thin Lizzy, I would have been grateful. He said, but I don't know that that's what I would have wanted to do. He said, but I heard that debut Black Star Riders album and was blown away. And he said, I jumped at the opportunity to be a part of something like that. So you can imagine how flattering that was for us, even if he was full of shit to say it. You know, it sounded great, man. So I'm like, okay, dude, I love you. Let's do it. Here we go.
The mark of the man is this: when we were making the Killer Instinct and the drum tracks went down, and then Damon and Scott put on the rhythm guitars, then the bass went on, Robbie got all the tracks and locked himself away in his hotel room for 4 or 5 days. Not to learn the bass line of that song. He came in with 3 or 4 completely different bass lines for each song.
Wow.
All of them amazing. And went, which one do you want? Which one of these 4 do you want me to play? And they were all amazing. And that, you know, that is a commitment and a passion and a work ethic there that I know Dame and I, being that it's working class boys we are from where we're from, that you instantly just fall in love with and go, this guy's special.
So you have Robbie on this record and obviously Nick producing, probably both add to the record and separate it a little bit from the All Hell Breaks Loose record. Sure. But what else do you feel is different about this new record from the first record?
Well, a couple things. You know, obviously the big difference simply being that we knew who we were as a band. You know, we were firmly aware of who we were and kind of where we wanted to go next, whereas on the All Hell Breaks Loose album, we weren't even sure if anybody was going to listen. We just didn't know, man. There was just so many unknowns. You know, the other thing that was different, man, is we had a little more time this time. Look, we're not a band that's ever going to take 3 months, 4 months, 6 months to make an album. As much as Scott Gorham would like for us to be. It's just, you know, man, everybody plays great, has great instincts, and, you know, we want to get it done. But, you know, I really got to take a minute and talk about the big difference the extra time made, especially for Jimmy DeGrasso. I think this is the best Jimmy DeGrasso studio performance of that guy's entire career. And no one has a fatter resume out of all of us than that guy.
Right.
Different styles, huge drum gigs, man, especially Megadeth and Suicidal Tendencies. I mean, he's a drummer's drummer. And the guy played out of his shoes on this record, man. It's just, you know, if we were going for the Celtic thing, he delivered. If we were going for the groove thing, he delivered. If we were going for just impact, stuff that was a little more melodic, man, he embraced it all. And of course, Nick helped with that a lot, man. They had a lot of fun working together, those two. But a huge difference on this record, man.
Right on. Hey, Damon, I was always a big fan of your stuff that you did with Brother Kane. I wanted to ask you, do you miss not doing lead vocals?
You know what, man? You're the first person that's ever asked me that question. You really are. And I don't miss doing lead vocals.
You have a great voice.
Well, thank you, man. You know what? I get to do enough of that. You know, when BSR is not on the road, I do some solo stuff. And it's a lot of fun, man. But this is the thing that I tell people all the time. You got to remember that I became the singer for Brother Kane completely by default.
Oh, yeah.
I had never, you know, man, playing in the clubs in the early days, you know, I would sing one or two songs just to give our singer a break. But I put Brother Kane together because I wanted to be Dwayne Allman, and I wanted to find somebody else to sing, you know. And, we went through a dozen guys. We even already had a development deal because the label liked some of our songs, and it was a fluke. The A&R guy heard me sing. Ironically, I sang Jailbreak at a gig one night. And, you know, and I just sort of fell into it. So I'm grateful for that, man. I'm grateful that I can sing and go out and do some stuff on my own and contribute, you know, to this band, singing background vocals. It actually, I think, helps some too when Ricky and I are writing together, you know, making sure we get, you know, find the right key that he's going to be able to get the story across. You know, we can always, you know, modulate or move stuff around. So it's been helpful in a lot of ways. You know, I'll do some singing, and I appreciate that, man, a lot. But, you know, hand on my heart, bro, Ricky Warwick is the guy I was looking for 25 years ago. He just is, because this is what I wanted. I wanted to be a badass guitar player with a fucking badass front man, and here I am at 50 years old, and I finally got it.
And I agree. Ricky, you're the voice for this band for sure, and you're going to go do a music video, you mentioned. Can you reveal what song it's for?
We're going to go and do two. We're going to do one for The Killer Instinct, and the next lead-off track off the album is going to be The Finest Hour.
Okay, awesome.
And we're going to do a video for that as well in Italia, in Milan, which is going to be very nice. And we're doing it with a good friend of ours, a guy called Danny Bullman, who is he does many things. He's a great tattoo artist, but him and his buddy also make movies, and Danny's got a great understanding of what the band's about and has known us for a long time, so I think he's going to do a very good job.
Excellent stuff. And what about touring? Plans to tour the States?
Absolutely. Here in New York City, April 30th at Irving Plaza with Europe. We're looking forward to that. We're doing the UK with Europe as well. And then, you know, festivals Europe over in Europe, the continent, not the band,
right.
in the summer. And definitely plans to tour the US in a major way till the end of the summer or the fall. Absolutely. You know, that's what we, you know, when you make a record like The Killer Instinct, as proud of it as we are, we just want to get out there and play it and let people hear it and, you know, spread the word.
Absolutely. And I know you're tight with the Def Leppard guys, I've heard. I got Rick Allen coming on the next show after this one. I will. And any predictions on what style they might be going to
for? I've heard some of the stuff. I was over at Joe's in April. Joe produced, I did a couple of solo records this year, and Joe produced one of them. I did an acoustic one, an electric one. And Joe produced the acoustic one, and he played me some of the stuff that they're working on, and it's really, really good.
Cool. Was it a vintage sound, would you call it, or?
There's no ballads.
Yeah, I know ballads.
You know, they've kept it hard. They have one song, which obviously I can't tell you the title of, but it's got a groove on it. I can only describe it as like Another One Bites the Dust meets almost like This Is Radio Clash by The Clash, which are very similar grooves.
Yeah.
But the hook in the lyric is genius. And I just heard it and I was just like, oh man, you bastard. you know, that's why you've sold 70 million albums and, you know, I've sold 12, you know. Right. So, but, you know, I think everybody's going to be very, not surprised because it's Def Leppard, but I just think they're going to make a very mean album this year.
Thanks again, guys. We really appreciate you joining us. The album is called The Killer Instinct. It comes out on February 24th, 2015 on Nuclear Blast. And it sounds just incredible. Everyone has to check this record out.
Concrete jungle. There's a flag of the inconvenience. The flags above the
That's the title track off the new Black Star Riders record, which comes out in February, late February. The Killer Instinct. Great, great stuff. And you can actually buy that single that you heard right there, a little sound sample, is about 90 seconds or so. You can actually buy that in full on iTunes, and we encourage you to do that. Help support what these guys are doing. Their full-length record for The Killer Instinct will be out in February. You can pre-order it on iTunes, and I'm sure probably on Amazon and stuff too. Big thanks to Ricky and Damon for joining us. Honor meeting those guys, and I can't wait to see them live in concert in April in New York City. Right now, I want to play a little of Damon's music before, way before, long before he was in Black Star Riders. This is going way back. This is actually Damon, not just on guitar, but on vocals. This is a song. This is, listen to this guy's voice, man. Great guitar player, a great, great singer. This is And Fools Shine On by Brother Kane.
Can't you see me?
That was A Little Brother Kane, featuring Damon, who now plays in Black Star Riders, and he's on vocals on that one. In Black Star Riders, he is, of course, on guitar. What a voice on that guy, man. Love it. Love it. One talented dude. And one underrated band, Brother Kane. You know, they snuck onto like FM radio with here and there a little bit, but great. They put out, I don't know how many records they put out off the top of my head. I was just down in my CD room in my basement, and I have two of them that I bought back in the 90s, and both were really good. So good stuff. If you don't know Brother Kane, go check. I suggest you check out their record Seeds. It is a good one. And also, check out The Killer Instinct. The single is now on iTunes, and the band is Black Star Riders. Guys, I appreciate you joining me on this episode of Talking Metal. On the very next episode, which I'm going to actually try to post like within a few days, we have the one and only Rick Allen from Def Leppard joining us for an interview. This is going back to the 70s. The band is Angel, and the song is The Tower. Epic. Listen to this. Raw, hard rock, going back to the mid-70s. Tower by the great band Angel.
Slips past the hills. Snow moon climbs way up in the sky.